Off in the salty ocean, off where the waves roll free. The sparkling water rises, then crashes to the sea. Out amongst the breakers, you'll have no need to fear. It's true, it's the blue frontier.
Welcome to our latest episode of Rising Tide, the Ocean Podcast. This is David Helfarge, and my perennial co-host is Vicki Nichols Goldstein.
And how is everyone?
Hopefully well today, as today we have Natasha Benjamin with us, not as our occasional co-host, but as the co-director of a documentary film. And joining us again, Ana Blanco, the other co-director of this documentary, and as past listeners may recall, executive director of the International Ocean Film Festival. As when it comes to blatant promotion of ocean issues and ocean events, well, you've tuned into the right show. So, the film is Sequoias of the Sea. The issue is the world's kelp forests, and the event is the Ocean Film Festival in San Francisco, where SOS, as we call it, will be having its world premiere on Sunday, April 13th. So, SOS, Sequoias of the Sea. What is it? Where is it set? How long did it take to make? Who wants to go first? Ana?
Thank you so much for having us, David. Really appreciate it. This is such a special film for us. And for me and Natasha, we've known each other for a long time. We've worked together. And there's a lot of things I like about this film, but the story I like to tell is how this film got started. Natasha's father, Mark Benjamin, is a filmmaker in his own right, and he came to visit during the pandemic, May of 2021. And when she told me he was coming, I said, well, let's have lunch. And so we went and had lunch. We were sitting outside. It was a beautiful day. Sausalito in the background. And Natasha asked me how many kelp films we had in the International Ocean Film Festival. And at that moment, we didn't have any. And she was shocked. I was shocked. And with everything happening with the kelp situation, we looked at each other. And her father, without skipping a beat, said, well, why don't you two girls make a film about kelp?
And you said, we're not girls, we're women.
And we were just, and then it just clicked. And we looked at each other and said, well, obviously, let's do this. And that was almost 4 years ago now. So
4 years in the making.
And Natasha, can you add to that?
Yes. When Ana and I looked at each other at that lunch and decided to do this, I think we had no idea what we were getting into, but have spent the last 4 years up on the North Coast talking to folks that are at ground zero of losing 95% of their underwater forests and documenting the story of a community in Mendocino that has been greatly impacted by this loss of kelp. I had witnessed this loss over the last 10 years as a diver and a surfer, spending time in the water and literally watching this entire ecosystem disappear. And that's how I came to it, was watching a climate disaster happen in real time in a very short amount of time. And Ana and I believed that this story was so critical to tell because even within our ocean community, it was amazing. People didn't really know what was going on. And the scientists and the folks up on the Mendocino and Sonoma coast were shocked when they would look out and they would see that kelp forest canopy at the surface. Every day in the summer, it was just part of the fabric of that of our North Coast, and it was gone. And so we decided to start filming and tell the story. We had this perfect storm of events that happened. For those that don't know the kelp story, I'll do a quick recap, which is in 2013-14, there was what the scientists called a warm water blob, that where temperatures increased drastically along the north coast of California and into Oregon, Washington. And that warm water triggered a number of different things. One, it killed off the kelp. Kelp needs cold water. It also triggered a disease that killed off all the sunflower sea stars. And when those sunflower sea stars and all the sea stars disappeared, the purple sea urchin, the little spiky sea urchins, exploded. And now there is a desert of purple sea urchins where this kelp forest once lived. And there's no more kelp. And without a predator for the sea urchins, without these sea stars, these large sea stars, the sea urchin population has taken over.
How does that fit in too with the loss of otters in that area? Because that always has been the kelp, the otters, and now we've got the wasting disease of the sea stars. How does that fit in, and what are people thinking about in that regard?
Great question. We always had sea otters on our coast, and 150 years ago, we hunted these sea otters to extinction. And there are now no more sea otters on the North Coast. Sea otters are a key part of the kelp forest ecosystem, and without them, the system is not in balance. And at this point, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is looking to reintroduce sea otters to the coast. This is very controversial for a number of different reasons.
Did you have any challenges with getting people to speak their mind and getting their perspective during the filming of this pretty cool documentary?
I don't think we had anybody who was reluctant to share their story. And I think what's so special about the film is that we have a lot of different people with different backgrounds, and everybody's willing to talk about the issue because everybody wants to see some kind of a solution, and everybody wants to help the kelp, as we keep saying, and everybody wants to bring the kelp back. So we have a chef, we have scientists, we have a commercial sea urchin diver, we have members of the tribe, we have nonprofit organizations. I don't recall anybody ever not wanting to talk about the story and to share their thoughts and share their impact more than anything that the loss of kelp has had on them. And then there's so many solutions that people are working on. And I think that's where the film has a lot of hope in terms of, let's talk about what we're doing and what we can still do to help bring the kelp back.
And people in disasters, when you cover disasters, people respond. People want to tell their stories. And I think the difference here is when we have the wildfires on shore, everybody sees them. But when you lose your forest of the sea, the only people impacted are tend to be those living by those forests. So you've seen the collapse in Fort Bragg. Your center of your film is this town that had an urchin fishery that collapsed, had a recreational abalone diving industry that supported $20, $30 million a year of activities. What's nice is you've got some beautiful images of the kelp, some ugly images of the urchin barrens. But what's really striking to me about the film is the people, that how a natural disaster like this impacts, as you say, a fisherman, a dive operator, a recreational diver, a scientist, and their families, and how they're all interacting, which is a lot of shooting time. You've got a lot of people in your film who probably don't see each other day to day, but they're seeing each other and they're seeing you. What was like unexpected during your shoot? What didn't you expect to see that showed up for you?
When we started filming the story, there wasn't an end. We didn't know what the end was going to be. We were watching all these restoration efforts and all of these different ideas about how to bring back the kelp, how to create markets for these purple sea urchins that there's too many of, trying to look at all these different solutions. But we, at that point, we didn't know what was going to work and what wasn't going to work. But what we knew is that this community had to shift. They'd lost the natural resource that they depend on, the kelp forest that all of the fisheries depend on was gone. And what's also interesting about Fort Bragg and the Mendocino community is there's been a history of that depletion over time, whether it was around timber and different fisheries. The idea of being a resource-dependent economy is not working anymore. We know things are changing. The ecosystems have collapsed. Climate change is impacting these ecosystems. And what this story really is watching this community change to what they're calling a blue economy. And the one dive shop in Fort Bragg shut down because they lost their ocean ecosystem and the whole dive industry that worked around that and the abalone fishery that depended on that kelp ecosystem. And when we started filming, there was no dive shop. And by the time we ended, things have changed. And we got to watch that evolve over the 3 years and watch this community really try to shift into what they're calling a blue economy, where they're becoming less resource dependent.
Because there are so many emotions that people are sharing in this film, what was your most memorable or emotional moment? What were you really touched at, or what touched you when you were filming this and speaking with a lot of people?
I think there were several moments, but the one that just immediately comes to mind is the moment where we were filming these young women who were part of the Kashaya Band of Pomo Indians. And there's a great group called Reef Check Foundation. And they were teaching these young women how to go scuba diving. And we were there on the beach when they did their very first dive. And at first they were scared and they were like all the equipment and they had gone through all the training. And then they started walking down the beach. And of course, it was a beautiful sunny day and they went into the water. And so for a lot of them, it was the first time seeing kelp growing in the ocean. And when they came out, they were just so excited. They were laughing. They were bubbly. And one of the girls made a comment. She goes, "This is where we belong. This is our ocean. This is where we belong." And it just really resonated with me. And I thought, what a great accomplishment for this organization, for the Native tribes to be able to connect and see abalone and to see the kelp. For me, that was it, every piece of the film, honestly. Has great characters and there's a lot of moments like that, but that's the one that stands out for me the most.
And I think bringing in that California Native American perspective that not only the young tribal members learning to scuba dive, but training with drones to do aerial surveys, to be part of the co-management of the effort to try and restore the kelp. And, you know, as you talk and as all the people in the film talk about creating a blue economy and being more sustainable, reminded me of a story I did a little north of there on the Klamath River, where one of the Uruk elders was out there working on river restoration. He says, "Funny thing is, Western science is finally catching up with what we've always known, and that's nice." And I think a lot of that spirit runs through this film of a different perspectives needed to deal with this ocean catastrophe that's climate linked, that's resource linked.
Mm-hmm. And coming at it from the commercial fisherman side, the recreational fisherman side, the tribes, the scientists are all kind of being impacted in different ways and what those experiences are. But they all have this common connection, which is to bring back the kelp.
What were all the challenges that are involved in doing an independent film like this? Logistical, financial, mental?
Oh, don't get us started.
Yeah. First and foremost, this is not a scripted film. It's a documentary. And not knowing how the film is going to end was a challenge. I think that was, for me, not understanding where the story was going, but having all the elements to a good story and then making a fantastic ending. That was a big challenge. Fundraising is always a challenge. I think knowing when you have enough footage, when you've done enough filming, is always, okay, I think we got it. Everything from that to something as simple as driving to Fort Bragg. It's a 3-hour drive and it's half of it's not on the freeway. So going and coming, and we probably did a dozen trips up to Fort Bragg to get the footage. There's something about it that you just get so enamored with and you just keep going. And the more you want to know and the more it fuels your soul to just keep going. I think that's the best way to say it, to keep telling the story and adding more to it to give it the picture that you're looking for, the vision that you're trying to create.
Was there footage that you had to cut out that you really grappled with? Some of the stories that you couldn't quite squeeze in?
There were so many. I have many lessons learned from this process, but one is don't film so much because there's so much more work when there's that many more hours of footage to go through, and we can't tell all of the stories. There were so many stories. We met a woman at one of the dives at Casper where they were removing urchins and smashing urchins, who's trying to create a building material out of the urchins as a marketing tool for the urchins. And that was like a whole story in itself that could have been its own film. There was the story of what the National Marine Sanctuaries are doing and working with the tribes and the commercial fishermen that also could have been an entirely different film.
Oh, and don't forget the dead whale.
Oh. Fort Bragg has so many stories. Anna and I even possibly started making another film while we were up there. There's so many stories. And that was probably the hardest thing, I think, for Anna and I, was to figure out how to tell the most compelling stories and having to cut so much of what we documented. So I'm hoping to use a lot of that footage that didn't make it into the film to create short pieces for social media, online content, So it's not gone. It will still live, but it didn't make it into the film.
Do you love the salty characters and ocean champions we have on The Rising Tide? So do we, and we're dedicated to bringing inspiring stories and voices that make waves. But here's the catch. We need your support to keep the tide rolling. A tax-deductible donation at bluefront.org will help keep The Rising Tide on the air and online. If you're ready and able to amplify these salty voices for the sea, dive in with a donation, big or small. Visit bluefront.org and join the movement. And now, back to the show.
Tell us a little bit about the kelp itself, because there are different species of kelp throughout the West Coast. What species are we specifically talking about?
So the primary species on the North Coast is bull kelp versus giant kelp, which is what I think most people imagine when they think of kelp. That's the Monterey kelp. When you go to the Monterey Bay Aquarium, giant kelp in that big tank, that's the iconic species. Right around San Francisco, the species switch and you get primarily bull kelp, which is a long stalk with fronds on top of the surface of the water, not leaves continuously growing from the bottom to the surface. And that, when we talk about losing 95% of kelp, it's the bull kelp specifically from the San Francisco to the Oregon border. That's that stretch where we had that huge loss.
Are the other kelps impacted through this blob and the warming as well?
We've seen loss of kelp throughout the entire coast of California, 70 to 80% in many areas, including the giant kelp that you see in southern part. But what Sonoma and Mendocino saw was the worst of it.
So the giant kelp is beautiful. It sways in the water. It's like the tallest ballerina-like kelp. And then you get north and the bull kelp's like the biker kelp. It's tough and leathery and it's designed for these really active oceans full of big waves and storms. And it's to see this toughest breed go away is tough to see what people are doing. When they think of California, they don't think of working waterfront towns like Fort Bragg. So you've brought this story to life in terms of the people impacted. And you now have still need some work, I know, but it's a pretty finished film. What is it, 50, 60 minutes?
54 minutes and 18 seconds.
And the world premiere is going to be on April 13th at the International Ocean Film Festival. Maybe, Anna, you can tell us about premiering your film and what it means.
I've been doing this role for now 14 years and never thought I'd still be doing it. But to, after watching so many films, to be able to make a film is such an incredible accomplishment. And having Natasha to do it with has just been an amazing story. So it's an amazing story for the film festival, for the film itself. I'm moved to tears. I have to be careful because I'll start crying. I'm so emotional about it. But at the end of the day, when I went back and said there were no kelp films, we've had several kelp films since then. This year, it's our only kelp film. And it is the only kelp film that we've ever shown that has so many stories about so many different people who have been impacted, but also all the solutions that are being presented. So it's a very different type of kelp film, which we're very excited about. It is closing night. So it's Sunday, April 13th at 4 p.m. at the film festival. And a lot of people are aware that this film is going to be a world premiere. So a lot of people are looking forward to seeing it. And I'm excited to be presenting it.
So what are the dates of the film festival? And where does SOS, Across the Sea, go after its big world premiere?
So the dates of the festival are April 11 to 13. We have quite a number of world premieres in the festival. We have an amazing film for opening night entitled Turtle Walker. And so there's just so many great films, as always. And for Sequoias of the Sea, our next screening is actually going to be during San Francisco Climate Week on Thursday, April 24th. So we're excited about that. And we've submitted to probably a dozen film festivals across the United States and around the world. So we expect to have a lot of eyes on this film and a lot of eyes on Fort Bragg.
That is very exciting. So tell us a little bit more about the festival, the International Ocean Film Festival. Are there social elements included? Are there cocktail parties? Are there opportunities for producers and directors and movie stars?
The festival is celebrating its 22nd anniversary, and it's 3 days of film. We do have four panel discussions that are super exciting, super interesting. I can't give them away yet, but those take place on Saturday and Sunday. And we have some amazing speakers for that. You can't have a film festival without having parties. So we have an opening night party on Friday night after the opening night film. We have a party on Saturday night, which has now become our surf night party. And then we have our wrap party on Sunday, which closes down the festival. And it's open to anybody who's still standing, shall we say. But we do invite a lot of folks. The media is going to be there this year. Several outlets are going to be there. Opening night, like I said, has some interesting elements to it. We also have a musical production that is taking place on opening night, and it's called Climate Music. So they perform music, and there will be a climate story on the screen behind them. So that's exciting. And we do get producers and directors, and there's great networking opportunities. I think of the 33 films we've selected, at least half the filmmakers are coming. So we have a lot of filmmakers coming from outside the U.S. as well as local filmmakers. And I think that's what makes it so interesting and so exciting. It's definitely global, but we also have great local present representation as well.
What is your vision of how films and documentaries and the International Ocean Film Festival play in the role of advocacy and conservation? What kind of repercussions are you hoping to see after you show these films?
A lot of people come to the film festival, obviously, to learn more about the ocean. We do an exit survey and people share what they've learned, how they became motivated to change something in their own lives. And we see repeatedly how much people are motivated to make simple changes in their life, but also bigger changes. And just encouraging people to tell more stories about our ocean. So much of what happens is below the waterline. You can't see it. And we need to tell these stories so that people become more informed and they are interested and become compelled to protect it. And now more than ever, I feel like our messaging, our films really need to be heard and seen. And we're expecting a much bigger audience this year. I think given the climate that we're living in right now, a lot of people are looking for moments of hope, moments of solutions. And I think a lot of the films that we show present that opportunity for people.
So there'll be this world premiere, Blue World premiere, on the 13th, and you'll take it to other film festivals. But this is a huge story. Kelp is the new coral. What's your plans? What's your thinking? Go with the film festival circuit and then try and get on TV? How will people listening to this be able to see the film?
Most filmmakers, independent filmmakers, do the film festival circuit, so to speak, for about a year and a half. At the same time, they're looking for distribution, and that can come in many different ways at many different levels, something as high as Netflix to something as a small distributor who helps to get the film on stations like PBS. And at the same time, our plan is to have an impact campaign to show the film as many times as we can, as Natasha said earlier, using those shorter clips of something that perhaps didn't get into the film, but that can be used on social media. Just really maximizing our exposure for the film to as many different audiences as possible. And there are a few films that do have incredibly successful impact campaigns and learning from what they do.
I think our goal is for as many people as possible to see the film, and really people who don't know anything about kelp, which is the majority of our population, and to take this very local story and put it in the framework of what's happening around the world. We're seeing kelp loss and ecosystem loss everywhere right now at an unprecedented rate. And this story is a little microcosm of what's happening all over the place. So we're hoping this film is a conversation starter around how our ecosystems are changing and how communities are shifting to adapt to that change.
With your work in the kelp forest, have you seen this kind of decline in other parts of the world?
We were fortunate enough to interview Sylvia Earle in the film, and she has a wonderful way of framing this in terms of the tremendous loss, but also the tremendous hope. We still have 50% of the kelp forest intact, And we have the technology and the solutions in hand. We know what needs to be done. We need to stop carbon emissions, and we have the tools to restore these forests. So there is hope, and that's what this film is really trying to do, is give us that hope.
What I enjoy the most about the films that I've watched over the years is that I'll see a film about something that's happening in some part of the world, and I know that those folks are teaching us how to do it, and they can take that and replicate it in another part of the world. So yes, kelp is disappearing all around the world, but perhaps somebody can learn from what's happening in Fort Bragg and the solutions that they have to help bring back the kelp in their neighborhood, in their area. And I've seen it happen many times with other films, and I think this film is going to add to that possibility.
Well, I've seen it, and it's phenomenal. No, you actually have done an amazing job, just to see the heart and soul that you've put in, and going up there and going to the cold water and really documenting people's lives and impacts and the entire ecosystem. So it's a film that we're all looking forward to. I'm looking forward to seeing it on the big screen. So I hope I can make it out there for the festival this year. So thank you very much, Natasha Benjamin, Ana Blanco, for producing, making, creating this film, and for joining us on the Rising Tide Ocean Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining us on the Rising Tide Ocean Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and leave us a review or share it with your friends and other ocean lovers. Follow us on Instagram and visit bluefront.org for more updates and additional resources. Rising Tide is a production of Blue Frontier, co-hosted by David Helvark and me, Vicki Nichols Goldstein of the Inland Ocean Coalition, with production support from Holden Hardcastle of Fluid Studios, Natasha Benjamin, Kelly Bates, and Nick Paz, and editing services provided by Charles Landon of Studio Cape May. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay hopeful and stay salty.
Off in the salty ocean, off where the waves roll free, the sparkling water rises, then crashes to the sea. Out amongst the breakers, you'll have no need to fear. It's true, it's the blue frontier. Off in the salty ocean, off to the blue frontier.
Sparky, come here, buddy. Sparky! There you are, good boy, Sparky!